I never thought I'd be hosting a podcast, but we are going strong. Today is a great time for you to get your message out there. And guess what? It's not that hard. Find the right partner. For us at the XM Podcast, that was Buzzsprout. Buzzsprout gets you listed in all the major podcast directories like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. Follow the link in the show notes and let Buzzsprout know the XM Podcast sent you. Get a $20 credit after your second paid invoice. It really helps support our show.
Welcome to the XM Podcast. Here is your host, mental health therapist, Matthew Kunabi.
I am very hard on myself, dealt with severe anxiety.
And it made me feel like a monster. I didn't have the energy to care.
There was just nothing more but to face what I had been running from.
I'm already an anxiety-filled mess.
It's just love. Like, it just goes back to love.
Well, how are you today? No, really. How are you? In fact, I'd like to encourage you to take a moment and check in with yourself and see how you are really feeling. You see, sometimes it's important to pause and be aware of what's going on inside of us. I'm pleased to have noticed that we have a bunch of new listeners. Grateful for all of you who keep coming back to listen and share the XM Podcast as well. Today, I must admit, I'm a little surprised that I'm only now covering this topic of anxiety and depression in its season 5. It's an episode I probably should have done way back in season 1, but I guess better late than never. I know we've talked about these things, but we haven't had a whole show designated to discuss these topics. To join me, I've invited a dear friend and a colleague to bring some expertise and wisdom to the conversation. Please welcome back to the XM Podcast, licensed professional clinical counselor, Patrick Malloy.
Thank you, Matt. Doing great. Glad to be here today.
You and I were just talking. I feel like it's a shame that you've only been on the podcast one time before this. I don't know what I've been thinking, but such a wealth of knowledge right down the hallway.
Well,
from me.
I've been under a rock. I've been kind of hiding, you know, so it's hard to find me.
We got
to
get you out of that rock, my friend. So I'm so thankful. I think you and I talked about grief in a podcast, which was timely. I was kind of coming into the holidays last year, and I came to you about a week ago or so and said, "Hey, Patrick, you know, we have been fielding a lot of phone calls around depression and anxiety from clients, from people just calling to get some more information and understanding." And it just kind of hit me. In 5 seasons, we haven't really done a podcast on one of the biggest areas that we serve as Emerge Counseling Ministries, which is people who are coming here with depression and anxiety issues.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to kind of dive into today and talk about. And I think it's such a important topic that sometimes can get glossed over by the other things that, you know, kind of grab our attention that are maybe not as generalized. But what are some of your thoughts to even get this conversation started on depression and anxiety, and maybe why it's such a large conversation?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're so related to one another. First of all, you know, they're so. We'll talk about comorbidity a little bit later, probably. But you know, one of the things in just putting some thoughts together that came to me is they're like two sides of a same coin or so. Depression is the absence of stuff that should be there, like excitement, energy, mood, whereas anxiety is the addition of stuff that shouldn't be there, like worry and everything. And I thought that was an interesting concept, you know, that how, you know, what we see in them. And they are so prevalent as well, you know.
Yeah.
Anxiety is the top mental condition I think that people have.
Yeah. You know? So I get asked this question a lot. I'm sure you do as well. Do you think that we live in a time now where people are dealing with more anxiety and more depression, or are we just talking about it more?
No, I think there's more.
Yeah.
I think we're living in times with more. When you look at, you know, our societal, the things that have happened from the pandemic on, people worry about health more, I think, and the whole political climate, the world climate, and things that are happening. Yeah. I think promotes anxiety especially, but certainly depression too, in like the sense of, well, what can I do about that? That, you know, hopelessness being a part of depression, if I don't feel like I can do something to help with the situation, it can promote some of those feelings of hopelessness.
So let's maybe pick one. Let's maybe start with depression.
Yeah.
And really talk about, because a lot of times they get talked about synonymously. You know, we will say depression and anxiety almost as if they're the same thing. And you kind of said, you know, they're similar, but they're kind of carved from, you know, a different part of the coin. Let's just talk about depression for a little bit and give some key factors and some things for our listeners to kind of go, oh, wait a minute, now I'm better understanding maybe what depression really is versus, I think, a lot of times culturally, we will take clinical words and use them inappropriately, like, you know, my husband's so bipolar because look at how emotionally he got, which is a clinical term not used appropriately.
Right.
You know, oftentimes people will say things about depression and anxiety in the same sort of fashion.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We use the word depression a lot. Like, it's pretty normal to feel depressed feelings, but that's not depression. Depression's a whole syndrome, a whole collection of symptoms that we'll see, you know, as part of the disorder. You know, the low mood, but it's also the loss of interest in things that used to be pleasurable to someone, and sleep and appetite problems, and sense of hopelessness, and sometimes thoughts of death, thoughts of dying, wish I wasn't around, or suicidal thoughts, loss of energy, you know. It's all those things that should be there that aren't there with depression. So so that's part of how I think we confuse things, like even with other terms like narcissism we've talked about, is that, you know, we use them colloquially.
Yes.
When, you know, everyone's going to feel depressed sometimes and down, but not everyone is going to have a mood that lasts for, you know, weeks and beyond that's depressed with these other symptoms.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing. The idea of happiness and sadness, the reality of those things is they come and go. They're ever...
It's life,
Right. And so I think, you know, it's unrealistic for us to expect us to go through life and not have moments of sadness and not have moments of joy and happiness. But depression is a different thing than that. It's not going into a sadness necessarily.
It's not a feeling.
Yeah.
It's not a feeling like, you know, we're describing the ups and downs of life.
Right. So talk to me about that. It's not a feeling. So it is more of just a state of being.
Yeah. Right. Well, you could think of it this way. We could think of like, okay, I'm feeling down. That's like weather.
Right.
We know weather's going to change. But depression's more of a mood. It's more like climate.
Yeah.
You know, that's generally going to be the same. And this whole collection of symptoms that we just talked about are going to be present. They're not going to be present in the normal everyday kind of, you know, I'm really bummed. I'm depressed today, people will say.
Yeah.
Those days are going to happen.
If you were to then kind of give us a general outline of a client, you know, give us a little bit of a client description of somebody who's coming in, a classic client that's dealing with a major depressive disorder. Mm-hmm. What are some indicators of that client that might be different from somebody who's going, you know, I'm kind of sad today?
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ashley T. Lee Podcast. Join me to hear the Bible read line by line and clearly explained. Listen to the Word of God in your car or home or work while it transforms your mind daily. Romans 12:2 says, "Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, which is good and acceptable and perfect." Knowing the Bible can give you peace and joy in this hectic world. Listen weekly to Ashley T. Lee Podcast on all podcast sites.
One of the things for me, I'm real sensitive to people's energies as we connect and talk, you know. I feel that droop. I can feel that heaviness with someone. So it's something that someone might say and tell me about, how they're down or they've been down for a while, but it's also something that I'm going to experience in the room is what I find when I'm with someone. So I'm going to get a sense of that. You can tell how someone looks. You look at the expressions on their face. There's nothing that is as that doesn't come forth, you know, is flat. Mm-hmm. You know, the there's effort. Not an excitement that you see. You can see a low energy sometimes moving slowly, but they'll just talk about. They're not able a lot of times to identify something that they're happy about or something mm-hmm. that they enjoy.
Yeah.
How long has it been like that? Well, it's been like that for months or for a year, you know. So we're going to hear things and we're going to notice and see things and feel things with someone who's depressed.
And I feel like there needs to be an understanding that that's not something people just kind of pop out of.
No.
It's a process.
Right.
From your perspective, what are some of the things, what are some of the experiences that over time lend themselves to draw somebody into a depression?
Well, we can certainly think of early life experiences that catch up with someone. We can think of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Like we talked on the last podcast, grief, if it isn't processed, if people aren't mourning, that can lead to depression. Medical conditions, drug and alcohol use, you know, all those kind of things. But there also is a genetic component that's been found too. Now, that doesn't mean someone, if they have the genetic marker, is going to have depression.
For sure.
But there is a correlation.
Yeah. I find that there are connections with clients that I've dealt and worked with who have depression, that there's a long series of how did I get here?
Mm-hmm.
A long series of I tried this, and nothing's working. And then it's almost like you get to the point where you're so in the quicksand, you've stopped moving. Like we've tried, we've exhausted all the resources. I've tried everything. Yeah. Nothing's working out for me. Life is not going in the direction I thought it would. A lot of it's relational.
Right.
You know, relationships that don't work or relationships that don't turn out the way you thought they would, or he or she turns out to be somebody that you didn't think they were going to be. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden now, all of this energy I've put into this and it's now not going in the direction I thought it would, that oftentimes tends to start looking like, okay, I've now fallen into depression.
Which is interesting to me, Matt, is those are things that lead to the condition of depression, but they're also the things that exacerbate it.
Correct.
So it's like a wheel that's turning.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. I think a lot of times when I'm speaking, and I've probably said this on the podcast before, you know, my delineation with anxiety and depression is often the look back. Mm. It's like the rear view mirror of going, you know, what happened? And this isn't the way it should be. And this is not how life was supposed to turn out. Mm-hmm. Where anxiety is more of the view down the road, mm-hmm. and you're going, how am I going to get there? And there's concerns about the road ahead, mm-hmm. and it's a lot of invention about filling in the gaps of, well, I don't know what the answer is going to be or the destination is going to be, but it's going to be horrible, and mm-hmm. I'm going to, you know, this is going to happen to me. You know, it's like you're putting in gaps. As Mark Twain has said, you know, I've had so much anxiety about so many things that never really even happened to me.
Yeah.
I botched that. But I mean, that's essentially what he was saying is my anxiety, the amount of time I spent worrying about something on stuff that 99% of the time never
come true, right?
So, Let's kind of wrap up depression for a minute. What do we do when someone's coming in? Like with somebody who's listening right now, and I've done this, I'm sure of you. I've done telehealth with clients mm-hmm. who have had depression because they can't even get to our facility. And some of the work we've done is today, you're going to talk to your left foot, and the left foot is going to move out of bed. And that's
great.
That's our goal.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to move beyond that. We're just going to say left foot today, you're going to touch the floor. Because people who severely are stricken by major depression, sometimes it's so bad they can't even get out of their bed. Mm-hmm. And I've had that conversation on, mm-hmm. on telehealth. What are some of the therapeutic things that we want to be sharing with the audience?
I think what you described right there is so powerful because it's conveying hope.
Mm-hmm.
People who are in the midst of depression don't have a lot of hope and mm-hmm. a real gloomy outlook for the present and the future.
Yeah.
So if they can accomplish something like even moving 1 foot out of the bed, you're conveying hope. But I think you as a therapist, we as therapists, want to convey that, look, here's what's going on. This is what depression is. We want to teach kind of what we're talking about, that it's a collection of things. It's not your fault that it's happened. There's a lot of reasons that this happens, like we talked about. Mm-hmm. But understanding what it is, but that there's a way out of it, and conveying that hope, to me, is an important thing in a first meeting with someone.
Yeah. Talk a little bit, too, because I know this is a sticky subject, but sometimes pharmaceuticals come into play with depression. And I know a lot of people are like, I'm anti, you know, antidepressants and I'm anti these things, but sometimes there is a chemical thing that's going on. What are your thoughts around that?
I believe that medication is a very effective and helpful tool with depression.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be necessarily long-term, right. You know, because you're right. And, you know, as faith-based, you know, people will come in and say, well, I'm not relying on God then if I'm taking a pill, you know, and I don't want to be dependent on a pill and all. And it takes a little bit of kind of broadening their understanding of why that this addresses some of the chemical imbalance that happens over time
right.
when someone is in this state of depression. And perhaps it is a short-term thing. It you know, it brings down some of the highs and brings up some of the lows that, you know, that can be a really helpful combination. And I know there's research showing about the combination of psychotherapy and medication done together is very effective.
Yeah, I think that's the key right there. I think oftentimes we're looking for the pill that's the cure.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's the way that these medications work.
I don't think they're really meant for that. Although I think some professionals do think that, unfortunately.
For sure.
But it's not meant, it's meant to be an adjunct service to two working together.
It's a tool
right.
to help fix the problem. It's
right.
not the fix of
right.
the problem.
Right.
But I have found with clients that have severe issues with depression, to do therapy successfully, it is helpful to have an antidepressant because oftentimes when they're in such a deep depression, getting any movement can be very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of almost similar to like, you know, working with people who are actively in their addiction. Mm-hmm. If they're actively using, moving the needle therapeutically is almost impossible.
Yeah. For some reason, I'm thinking of my dad's snowblower that he gave me.
Okay.
And I can't start the thing in the winter, you know, until I get a new spark plug.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah.
I need a tool that helps
get
the motor moving. And that's what a medication can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so overall in general, and I'm going to ask this about depression and then we can move our way into anxiety. What do you say to people who come in and say, I'm living in sin because I have depression, or because I have anxiety, it's sinful? Do you know what I mean by that?
I do, and I've come across that too.
Yeah.
My experience with that is it's a mindset that's developed over time based on a lot of misinformation and the stigma that's out there about mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I think our society has gotten a lot better about that, by the way.
Yeah.
But I think, again, I mean, some education around why these things happen. And it's not your fault. You didn't do something to cause this. Nobody wakes up today and says, you know what?
Right.
I'm going to start being depressed today.
Yeah,
I want to do that.
Yeah.
You know? That can be a really tough hurdle, especially for people of faith.
Yeah.
And I think conversations about it, and sometimes they're long conversations to help people understand that it's not something that you did.
Well, I think there's a lot of guilt that's tied with it, and there's a lot of shame that's connected with mm-hmm. it. And I think sometimes, you know, coming from a Christian perspective, we can take scripture and we can kind of take it out of context. And when God says, you know, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow there's enough worries for itself. You know, you stay focused in today and let me take care of tomorrow and, you know, so on and so forth. All of a sudden it's like, well, I am worrying about tomorrow. So does that mean I'm sinning? And, you know, I think it's a matter of God's desire is for us not to fall into these places of anxiety and whatever,
but see that's our natural faith-based state,
right?
that's where we belong. That's where we live. But something like depression robs you of that. Mm-hmm. It's the loss of something that should be there. So it hurts our perception of our faith in some ways like that, I think, mm-hmm. then.
Yeah. And so you kind of alluded to this earlier, and, you know, I think anxiety's been an issue from the beginning of time, and something I've mentioned before, I remember reading, it's like, if you think about early man, when you think about Old Testament man, who survives? High anxiety guy or low anxiety guy? And when you really get into the Old Testament, which I'm in the heart of it right now, I mean, every single day you were at risk of dying. Mm-hmm. Like something in the world was out to kill you.
Yeah.
So what happens is over time, high anxiety guy is the guy that survives.
Yeah.
And we also know it's a genetic predisposition that we can pass down generationally and generationally.
Yeah.
And so it's a leap, but it's a reality to say from the beginning of time, we have been passing down a gene for self-preservation of high anxiety. Now, you and I live in a culture right now where I'm not very scared of a saber-toothed tiger jumping out of the woods that are out the window right now and killing me, but I know in my life I have responded to stimulants as if a saber-toothed tiger is jumping out at me.
Right.
And I question that sometimes of going, you know, in the moment I'm responding as if I'm in a life or death situation, but in reality I'm not.
No.
But I'm just wondering then all of a sudden, what you had said earlier, you know, I do believe coming out of 2020 in the last several years as clinicians, we have seen a massive uptick in the amount of clients coming in with anxiety-related issues. So I just painted a whole picture from the beginning of time till now.
Well done. It only took a couple minutes.
That's right.
Wow. So,
What are some of your thoughts around this epidemic of anxiety? And I've said this before, I'm the first one to admit I have had anxiety issues in my life and understand and have empathy for people who suffer.
Right. Yeah. You know, what you described, we don't survive without anxiety.
Correct.
And we don't thrive without it. And it's there's a positive aspect to it. It's a positive thing. Yeah. But it's a feeling, it's a temporary thing rather than something that's ongoing, like we've talked about, same with depression.
Yeah.
I think part of it, when we talk about society, part of it is how instantaneous the news is. Pick up your phone and look something up. Pick up your phone, or you know, your phone will give you notifications.
Even if
about
you don't want it.
This happened, that happened. How is that not going to overload your nervous system?
Yeah.
You know? So some of it is the availability of information that we're like bombarded with new stuff to worry about.
Yeah.
Whether we want to or not sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's out of our control.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it's out of our control.
Yeah. There's a book called Heaven by Randy Alcorn. I don't know if you've ever checked it out, but it's brilliant. It's one of my favorite books on what life is like once we move beyond this experience. And he calls this pre-life and that life. Normally we call that the afterlife, but truly.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Truly that is life.
I like that.
And this is pre-life. And he said in life, which is what we would refer to as afterlife, it's more real than it is here. And what he was describing is, you know, it's a physical experience, but if you're looking at a mountain and your mind goes, I'm on that mountain, all of a sudden you're on that mountain.
Yeah.
The power of what God has designed in the mind.
Right.
Now, I don't think we have any concept or understanding of the complexities of that. But what I do believe is, what goes on in this brain of ours on a constant roll every day is super powerful. And I don't know that we give it enough attention. And I'll say to clients, if you in your mind allow that script to go, I'm a piece of crap, 1,000 times a day, if not more, what are you going to believe?
Yeah.
Probably, you know.
Yeah. Some of the research on the brain, you know, as shown, we think 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day.
Mm-hmm.
If the majority of those thoughts are negative, like you're saying, I'm a piece of crap or whatever,
right.
you're wiring your brain that way.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm right with you on that.
Yeah. I think that a lot of times people will, you know, I think the new phrase is, I'm going to manifest it. I'm going to manifest.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. There's truth in that. Uh-huh. If I think I'm going to be a loser 55,000 times a
yeah.
day,
yeah,
you are going to manifest right. it. And it's not one of these things where it's not like a name it and claim it type of situation. But I believe that you will direct your future based on how much you drive the negativity mm-hmm. in your brain. Mm-hmm. Now, with that being said, I think it's important to recognize that I do believe God gives us dominion over our thoughts.
Yeah.
And we do have the power to kind of go, wait a minute, that's not true. You know, mm-hmm. and I'm not against cognitive behavioral therapy, but this is a very CBT type thing. But yeah. I think a lot of times anxiety comes from us interjecting the space between A and B. I don't know where B is, but I'm going to invent the stuff that gets me between there. And it's going to come from a perspective of I can't do it, or it's never going to work out, or whatever negative core belief system you're operating out of.
You know, I want to back up a second to something you just said, because I think it's really important about the power of the brain, how God mm-hmm. made us and made our brains, that we're finding out more and more stuff every day.
For sure.
How we're marvelously made, wondrously made.
That's right.
But, you know, we teach, one of the things we teach for depression, anxiety is visualization, is using your God-given imagination. And what, you know, the research has shown is that the brain can't distinguish between whether we're actually sitting at a serene lake or if we're vividly imagining it inside.
That's right.
So we teach people how to do that because it releases some, you know, the positive chemicals and the feel-good things, you know. Well, if that's true, then it goes the other way too. If mm-hmm. we're imagining all these bad things that can happen, we're wiring our brain that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. And so with that, I think a lot of times, and maybe this will be helpful for people who are dealing with anxiety, a lot of it's rooted in fear. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, years ago when I was really struggling with anxiety, it was fear about, I was having to make a pretty severe life change as far as the direction in my career and whatever. And in my mind, all I knew was one thing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was like, now I have to let go of this one thing that I was good at. And now I'm not going to be good at anything. And, and really there was no truth in that. There's a million things God has given most all of us that we can do. It's just, I didn't have a vision for it. And so therefore the fear set in of, I don't have anything to offer this world. If I don't do that, I don't have anything. Mm-hmm. And it's cliche, but I go back to it all the time. It's like God says in one form or another, 365 times, do not fear in Scripture. And I do believe, because we have to hear it once a day, you know, because there's so many things in our life that, you know, it's almost keeping us immobile. The enemy wants to keep you out of the game.
You know, though, we've overloaded our nervous system, though.
For
sure. Because your example of the saber-toothed tiger, which I think I just saw in the woods.
Is it running
back
there?
Let's not go outside. We had X amount of things our ancestors to worry about.
Yeah.
Our system is set up for that.
Yeah.
It is not set up for the amount of things and information that comes our way, like we were saying earlier.
Yeah.
We're on overload, which produces more anxiety then. There's more to worry about and so much that's out of our control that we're like, we're rewiring ourselves.
Yeah.
You know.
That's very true. This was maybe a year or two ago. I noticed I had a news app on my phone.
Yeah.
And every time a story would break, it would give me a notification. So I was hit with these notifications. And I remember it was like over the course of maybe 2 or 3 days, it was just like, this person dies at 34. This person dies at 42.
Yeah.
This person dies at... And all of a sudden, I started kind of going, well, I have to know what they died from. Because my anxiety would start to go,
oh my
of going,
gosh.
Am I in fear of something. And so then I'd go down the rabbit hole and I'm looking at all these people. Well, I don't really know who they are, but then, yeah. You know what I mean? And yeah, so it does. It causes that anxiety.
I turn those notifications off on my phone. I can't do it. My wife and I were talking last night about some of this, and I was saying, I got to take a fast from the news and from, reading stuff and looking stuff up. For now, I do, because my anxiety is going up, just like we're talking about.
Well, the other thing when I was doing more clinical work than I am now, majority of my clients were teens and young adults. And I don't know how kids are dealing with the social pressures of today.
Yeah.
I think I've heard many times, as you probably have already, in the next DSM, we're going to have a diagnosis that's related to social media with comparison. Because essentially what's happening on social media is for a person is putting the best life.
Creating their life.
Then as the onlooker, you're seeing a fabrication or a portion of their life that looks like, oh my gosh. And then what happens is a comparison. And you will always lose.
Yeah, and that's, you're right. I do see that all the time. Yeah. Ask any of our clinicians; we see that all the time.
Yeah,
and people comparing, and you have to talk it out with people that that's not real.
Exactly, but it's so hard because it's like if you're, let's say, 18, 19 year old kid, mm-hmm. and you're looking at this 19 year old kid, and it's like they've got it all figured out, and they've got a career, and they've got all of these things, and you're sitting here going, "Well, shoot!" But what I try to help people get to is. One, that's a fabrication. Mm-hmm. But two, stop comparing yourself to these things. I remember our pastor was doing a marriage thing, and he said, anytime you compare your wife to somebody else's, you're setting your wife up for failure because you're taking the worst part of her with the best part of somebody else because you're only observing that part. You do the same thing with yourself.
It's the same process,
You're taking the worst parts of you and comparing it to a fabrication.
I talk with clients about you're comparing their outsides to your insides.
That's it. It's unfair.
You can't win.
So how do we help people get around that?
Telling them those kind of things first off and help them see it's not real. Look at what people put on there. Is they're creating an ideal life that maybe they want or wish they had.
Yeah.
And I think at the same time, looking at the positive things that are going on in someone's life,
I was leading a devotional this morning for our admin team, and it was on serving, and it was talking about how God has designed all of us to be able to serve in different areas. Because if we all served in the same area, it's the only thing that we'd get done.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times that comparison thing is like, oh, look how this guy's life is going. But God didn't design
you in
that way.
It's the analogy of the body. It's Paul's analogy of the body. That's really helpful.
Exactly.
Use that with folks.
You know, your journey isn't that person's journey. Right. The need for your gifts are different than that person's gifts. And being able to get that person to hone in on what that gift might be.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, that was the turning point, from my, serious anxiety disorder, which is funny because you and I are having this conversation and people can hear us, they can't see us. I was sitting in the seat that you're sitting in this office, working on that anxiety disorder.
I've been feeling more anxious sitting right here in this seat. Thanks a lot, man.
Almost 15 years ago now.
Wow.
I was in this. This is now my office, but I was 15 years ago a client in this office working on anxiety issues, which is serendipitous on some levels, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's pretty
but
cool.
I think it's important for us to be able to look at going, what is God's plan for me versus what's my journey compared to that person's?
You lose your sense of uniqueness the more you compare yourself to
others.
That's a part of it there.
That's totally right.
Just like you said, what is God's plan for me or what has God given me?
Because the other thing is you don't know where people's lives peak. And you're comparing yourselves to this guy whose life is peaking right now, but we don't know what's going to happen in 5 years. But God's plan for you is in, you know, in your 30s, that's where you're going to really hit and find some success in an area. Yeah. But then you're going to go through another adversity because God's going to, you know, shape you into, you know. So it's just, I think that's where the communication, the quick access, I always call it a fast food culture that we live in. It's like, can you imagine, like, even the era I grew up in, it's like, it took a long time for news to get around the world. You know, if something were happened, you may not find out about it for a couple days or whatever. Now, something happens anywhere, it's a fast food society. Everything's on the tip of our fingertips.
Now people in Alaska are going to know there's a saber-toothed tiger out there.
That's right.
It's just like that.
Just
and then,
like,
oh my gosh, there could be one here.
That's right.
Whatever, you know?
Yeah. And what happened that brought saber-toothed tigers back?
I don't know. Why did that?
Here's the headline. All of a sudden, saber-toothed tigers.
But you know what? If you think about that, though, this is all bad stuff that we're talking about.
Yeah, right.
A saber-toothed tiger or what disease came out or what new thing or... You know, what tragedy happened. Those are the things that get around like wildfire.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Because that's what sells.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while you see the feel-good story, but for the feel-good story, you have 10 of the other ones. I think one of the other things, too, I think is important when coming to, whether it's a saber-toothed tiger, or sometimes I use a bear analogy oftentimes. Yeah. It's like if you and I were walking in these woods out here, mm-hmm. and we're walking around the corner and a bear comes walking out, there's a chemical reaction that goes off in our body, and we see that bear. At that point, you and I don't need to be cognitive with the bear. We don't need to tell the bear a joke. But we go into a fight or flight, and we need to fight that bear, we need to run, or we need to play dead.
That's right.
And what God did is he designed our system so that it's a survival mode in that moment. But I think what the problem is so many people in their life have grown up and the bear lives at home. And they grow up in a home. And from 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, their brain is being shaped because the bear is an abusive father. The bear is an unattentive mother. And that's why I think we're seeing more and more and more issues as time progresses, is because you have more and more people who have grown up in these environments that they were molded and shaped.
Right.
And now they're in their 20s and 30s trying to figure this whole thing out.
Right. That they had to adapt to.
Exactly.
Just like we have had to adapt to over the years, or what we're growing up situations are.
Yep.
You know, wiring the nervous system, as you've said.
That's really good.
Yeah.
And what are any other thoughts regarding this topic of anxiety and depression that you think would be beneficial for the listeners?
I guess that, one thing, you were just sort of getting to some of this, is it's really helpful to people understand the difference between the logical and the emotional brains that we have too. And these feelings and stuff, and experiences we've had that get into our implicit memory, it's not available to our rational brain.
Correct.
You know, your example, walking in the woods and seeing a bear, you're not going to sit and plan what to do. You react just like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens, I think, when we're talking about these news stories and stuff. That's our emotional brain reacts to that, not our logical brain. But the emotion, it's the fear and the emotions are so powerful, it overrides, you know, that rational brain goes offline. And so some of our work with people is to help them learn how to calm that emotional brain. You know, how much of anxiety work is learning how to calm?
Totally.
Breathing, grounding, so that your rational brain can get back on board, so that we can have these conversations about you're comparing your insides to someone's outsides.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah, and what you're saying, so the physiological response is the front part of your brain, which is called the prefrontal cortex, in those moments, it actually shrinks. And it goes offline.
It's offline.
And so what we need to do is to think about different things, like you said, grounding, breathing techniques, to bring that back online in a moment for you to kind of go, okay, I'm responding to the world as if there's a bear there, but there's not. It's my fear of I'm not going to get this job.
Right.
And I can bring my brain back online and go, you know what? If I don't get this job, I'm going to go on this interview. I'm going to try that out. And you're able to kind of navigate that versus getting caught up into that.
That's why
response.
Those the breathing and the mindfulness and all that is so important to calm that part, or you can't think those positive thoughts like that because it's offline, your brain's offline.
There's a reason from as early as we can remember, if somebody gets worked up, you say, hey, take a deep breath.
Yeah, count to 10.
Count to 10, take a deep breath, and maybe do a walk.
Yeah.
You know, and as you and I, as EMDR trained therapists, that walk allows that bilateral stimulus to happen,
yes,
which is really important.
Right.
So I always tell people when you get worked up, take a little walk, take some deep breaths, and it's amazing how quickly you can come out of that that state. I think this stuff is so important, Patrick, and I you know how much I appreciate you and think of you. And, you know, I think the other thing is so many people suffer from depression and anxiety at some point in their life. It may not be forever, but this specific topic hits such a massive group of people.
Yeah.
And if anything, walking away from this conversation, my hope is people would... you know, be able to look at this and go, you know what, there's nothing wrong with me. This is something that I'm living with it right now. It doesn't mean it's a life sentence.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that God hates you. It doesn't mean that you've been abandoned by God.
Right.
You know, some of the other things.
You know, back to what you're saying about sin, people thinking it's sin.
Yeah.
This just dawned on me that what we've been talking about here is these conditions happen within a context, this environmental context that we're talking about, and the influences, you know, that come our way and so quickly, and the bad news and things like that. We're saying it's not just about you or your character. And that's a point I like to make to people. This is not about your character.
Mm-hmm.
This is about a response within the context to many stimuli that nowadays overwhelm us.
Yeah. That's so good. And a lot of times it's stuff that's unprocessed, you know, unprocessed life experiences.
That goes back to,
I think that's important. What we're teasing out is saying, it's not that there's something wrong with you.
No.
It's just, you know, like you and I talked in the podcast we did before about grief. Most people aren't taught how to grieve.
No.
So what happens is then you get into a position in life where you have to grieve and you go, I don't know what to do. You know, it's very similar. It's like, you know, a lot of people don't know how to process. There's not a class that often teaches our students how to process trauma or process adverse life experiences. And what happens is what we do teach people how to do, because we don't want to deal with their emotions, is to stuff it.
Yeah.
You know?
Just to find ways to go away from it.
Yeah.
You know,
and I catch myself all the time, you know, with two little kids of going, don't cry. And I'm like, you know, be a big girl, don't cry. I'm like, why am I? And I'll stop and go, you know, if you need to cry, let's cry.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay.
I think if I were to distill down the top issue that I see with folks, or the wound, I would call it the not good enough wound.
Yeah.
Maybe that's original sin. It's the I'm not good enough wound that everybody has baked into them, I think.
Yep.
We run across that all the time.
Yeah.
And so, our example of someone feeling inadequate looking at social media or something like that, what someone else puts on Facebook, you know, there's something that taught them how to feel that way too.
Mm-hmm.
So we go back and we look at when do you remember feeling that way in your life? Or when's the first time you felt that way? When's the worst time you felt that way?
Yeah.
Those are some of the markers that point to why they feel so bad now that we need to process and talk about.
That's good. Well, Patrick, I appreciate you so much, and I think this is when I was looking at the podcast we've done in the past. I'm like, I've never, out of all these episodes, I think we're almost to 90 episodes. We haven't done one specifically on anxiety and depression. How silly is that? So, thank you for having this conversation with me.
I enjoyed it. It was really enlightening, interesting, and there's so much to say about
it. It's always a joy talking to you.
Me too, man.
I want you to be really careful with the saber-toothed tigers out there, because
I'm looking out that window as we talk, and I'm sitting here with my anxiety. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Patrick. I appreciate you.
You too, man. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Patrick, and thank you, listener, for checking out this episode of the XM Podcast. I'm glad we are able to discuss this topic today. Hopefully it helps shed some light on the anxiety and depression topic. Patrick and I spoke later after recording this episode about the stigma with mental health medications. And although we don't advocate for them in every situation. There certainly are times when they are necessary. But often, especially in the church or in Christian circles, we can shame people for having to be on those for potentially a season. We certainly wouldn't do that if it were blood pressure medication or even chemo treatment. Just something to think about. Well, thank you for listening. And for more information on Emerge Counseling Ministries, please check out emerge.org. Well, until next time, or when our Savior comes, God bless.